Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. Happy Wednesday. Well, we've got the show of shows for you. We're not going to let you down. We've got some great guests. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after these messages. Folks, let's face it. As you get older, after a night with drinks, you don't bounce back the next day like you used to. Thanks to ZBiotics, you don't have to make the choice of having a great night or a great day. ZBiotics pre-alcohol prebiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink alcohol, it gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's this byproduct, not the dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this product down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and of course, you're going to feel your best tomorrow. So go to ZBiotics.com/JustNews to get 15% off your first order when you use the Just News promo code at checkout. Once again, ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they're going to refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/JustNews and use that promo code JustNews at checkout for 15% off your order. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and also for letting us have a good time.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. We spent a lot of time over the last 6 months digging into the polling data on why Donald Trump is so strong. There are so many different elements of it. One is the boomerang that the Democrats have created for themselves in the prosecution and pursuit of Donald Trump, clearly having an impact. Another is Donald Trump's uncanny ability to reach out and talk and connect with people that have traditionally been in the Democratic constituents, Hispanics, working class men and women, African Americans. They see in Donald Trump a lot of the values they used to see in the Democratic Party. They don't see it anymore in this far left party of Joe Biden. I thought I'd bring someone in to help us make sense of all this data and what we could expect to see over the next 6 months. He is a pollster for Donald Trump, one of the most important political minds I've ever encountered in my career, our good friend, John McLaughlin. John, great to have you back on the show.
John, it's great to be back, and great to I listen all the time and I read your articles. The coverage you're providing is essential right now because what we're seeing is unprecedented in American history, where you have a sitting incumbent president trying to put his political opponent in jail. And we've never seen this in America.
It's remarkable. And people see it for what it is. I mean, there's one poll this week, I think you had, that showed that a majority of Americans don't believe he'll get a fair trial in New York. A lot of the other polling showing that people expect that what Joe Biden is trying to do is to get Donald Trump in prison before Election Day. The American people can't be fooled. All the rhetoric, all the media stories aside, they know what's going on, right?
Yes. In fact, we posted the results of our new national survey last Friday. And it's 1,000 likely voters across America, and it's posted on McLaughlinOnline.com. And, you know, even though we're, 196, 195 days away from the election today, where 66% of all voters see these indictments against Donald Trump as political, and 56% think Joe Biden's played a role in these indictments, ordering them against President Trump. 54 to 36, they say there's a double standard of justice in the United States. 56 to 35, since we're close, so close to Election Day, they say let the voters decide, not the courts. And you've got 53% to 34% they believe Joe Biden is trying to put Donald Trump in jail. It was a little higher last month. Last month, by the way, the overall numbers, Trump was ahead of Biden 49 to 45. Last month, it was 49-43 because we'd come off of the historic primary wins. And I tell President Trump, and, you know, he kids around at his rallies. He'll often say, oh, my pollster, John McLaughlin, says I've got better numbers than Washington and Lincoln. And usually at that point, my phone blows up with a lot of reporters calls saying, did you really poll Trump versus Washington or Lincoln? I say, I'm not that old, but I do remember polling for Ronald Reagan because I was an assistant to, I was in Arthur Finkelstein's firm. And Finkelstein was one of the three pollsters who polled for Reagan. We delivered our polls to Mike Deaver. And so I was, had volunteered the Reagan campaign 80, 82. I worked for Finkelstein 84. We used to go to the White House, help Trump win re-election. But I remember going back and seeing the polls for Reagan in 1980 and 76. And compared to Reagan's numbers, Trump's numbers were actually better. And during the primary, I told the president, I said, this is a historic primary win because the way he won by a historic margin in Iowa, the way he won double digits in New Hampshire, it was a blowout. And that was including crossovers who were Biden voters coming into the primary as unaffiliated voters. The way he won in South Carolina by 20 points, this was a historic blowout during the nomination. And a lot of it was in rebuttal to, you know, Joe Biden trying to lock up his political opponent. But also the country's a mess where when you look at it, 66% of all voters said the country's on the wrong track. Joe Biden has a 42 approve in our poll because it's modeled after the 2020 presidential elections. So he has a 42 approve, but he has a 56 disapprove. There's lots of votes for Trump to get. We're at 49% of the vote, and Biden's at 45. He's come up a couple points less since last month because he's spending money in the battleground states. He is driving the narrative against us with these trials, where if you watch MSNBC, CNN, and the mainstream networks, you think this is a legitimate trial. You think it's legitimate. It's not. And everybody else, the majority of Americans are getting this, that, you know, what they're trying to do here is wrong. And Trump's not going to get it. By the way, Manhattan, since I'm a New Yorker, and I live in the suburbs. When I was a kid, I lived in the Bronx. But Trump's never going to get a fair trial in Manhattan. The jury pool is so overwhelmingly Democrat. Plus, you know more about this. The person that Biden sent in from his Department of Justice, Colangelo, to prosecute this case. Bragg's not prosecuting, even though he's a Soros-funded DA. Colangelo, after they said they weren't going to do this because it, you know, wasn't a valid indictment, et cetera, Biden says Colangelo in to prosecute this. So it's completely rigged. You know, like these other indictments, they're directed by Biden and his supporters. And it's all about stopping Donald Trump from winning re-election because we're ahead in the polls.
Yeah. And Donald Trump himself has masterfully been able to turn this debate himself. I mean, I think he picks battles and he highlights things that are occurring in the court that show the infringement of free speech, the unfairness of the system, the bias of the judge's family, a daughter whose career rests on, obviously, going after and defeating Republicans. The ability of the president to not only detect what the public's thinking, but to amplify the examples that, affirm what their concern is. That's been a very important part of his strategy, correct?
Yes. By the way, it's self-defense. I mean, literally, you know, you have to expose this. I mean, they're trying to put a gag order on him, right? And force it with penalties of going to jail and fines, et cetera. I mean, they've tried to confiscate his wealth. But when you look at the corrupt New York City politicians, I mean, that judge, Marchand, his daughter isn't just a political volunteer or some low-level person. She's a major player in a big Democrat operation that does internet campaigning and raises tens of millions of dollars for Biden, for Kamala Harris, for Chuck Schumer, for Adam Schiff. I mean, these are big players, and that judge should not be presiding over this trial. And Biden and should never have put Colangelo into Bragg's office to prosecute his political opponent. I mean, they are trying to make President Trump the Nelson Mandela of America. And we just have to fight back. We have to expose it, because the left-wing media in the country is carrying this as a legitimate trial, et cetera. It's a political persecution of your political opponent. I have clients in Europe who come over and say, this is what the communists did in 1947 when they took over Eastern European countries. It is just unbelievable that this is going on in America at this time.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the disconnect between what the American sentiment is, the public sees it as a persecution, and the legacy media trying to continue to force the notion that this is somehow a legitimate legal debate. I mean, you see incredible legal experts, many of them Democrats, Alan Dershowitz and John Turley, saying there is no crime here. The indictment fails to articulate a crime, and yet the media ignores all of that criticism. Does the media in some way make the case for Donald Trump that the whole system is rigged?
Well, they've become partisans in this, where they censor things. They really don't cover Trump when it's good news or when it's bad news for Biden. And the media, the mainstream legacy media, has lost credibility. And, you know, this, with the latest revelation with NPR, where there's, and by the way, what's flagrant about that is they're taxpayer funded. So what's supposed to be national public broadcasting is national Democratic broadcasting, and it's wrong. And it's, you know, and by the way, it's resonating where, I mean, when you look at Joe Biden's failures, because people are really concerned about inflation, and the national poll that we just posted, you have over 80% of all voters saying they've been negatively impacted by inflation. And you have half of them saying, to the point where they're having trouble making basic necessities meet. Price of gas is going up again. Biden wants to have a massive tax increase that'll throw the country into recession. We're losing, I mean, the border's out of control, crime's going up. We're losing wars to terrorists. Biden already surrendered Afghanistan and Taliban. Hamas, he wants to reward with a Palestinian state that'll be a terrorist state. Iran is attacking Israel directly. He can't end the war. You know, Russia's not afraid of Biden. He can't end the war. He's so corrupted. And, you know, most Americans are seeing this, where you have now in the electorate, you have voters who voted for Biden in 2020 are now voting for Trump in 2024. And it's roughly 4 or 5% of the electorate, plus there's another 4 or 5% of the electorate that's undecided. And the ones who have actually switched from Biden to Trump are African Americans, about a quarter. They are Hispanics, about a quarter. And their average age is 35, so they're younger voters. So that in a new national poll, Trump's getting 26% of the black vote. He's winning Hispanics by a point, 49-48. These are huge changes from what we saw in the last election. So this is what what Biden's looking at, he's destroyed the old Obama coalition that helped him get elected. And now he's renewed the Trump coalition, which is a majority of working class voters, anti-Washington voters who really want to, I mean, Trump's slogan, make America great again. They really want to do that. They really want to restore America.
They feel it's slipping away, and they feel it's their job to, it's their generation's job to step into this breach and change it. I want to ask a little bit about moving people from being supportive in the polls to actually going out and casting a vote, because it's a process, right? The first is, all right, we're sold on Donald Trump's policies. We're sold on him. He's a better option. We remember what it was like 4 years ago compared to Joe Biden's America right now. But getting traditional Democratic constituencies that then cast the vote is a process that has to involve real engagement over the spring and summer. I know the campaign's doing a lot. I see it every day. There seems to be other conservative groups now working together to also create the sort of conversations and engagement so that it's not lip service. We're really going into these communities and talking to Hispanic business owners and women and African-Americans and young people and sealing the deal. That's going to be the important part of this summer, right?
Yes. In fact, I mean, I work with Chris LaCivita and Susie Wiles. They did a great job on President Trump's campaign to win the nomination. But the Republican National Committee needed to be retooled. I mean, just, you know, because I'm an outside the Beltway kind of consultant, not inside the Beltway. And I'm,
that's a healthy thing.
Not one of the, not in the clique, but we keep winning elections and we got to get Donald Trump elected. The difference is you got to get into the communities. You have to have real people. And for example, New York, the recent congressional special election where Tom Suozzi, the Democrat, won. After the election, somebody said to me, how did the Republican National Committee's Bank the Vote campaign go? I said, I never saw it. I mean, we got killed in the early voting, where you had only 52% of the voters voted on election day. You had 48% ahead of time, and you had huge leads by partisan Democrats in Queens, the Queens part of the district, and Nassau County. So we were down 16,000 votes going into election day, and we only were able to make up 3,000. And that's with a strong Republican organization in Nassau, because we were getting killed in Queens, but it was the early voting. And that has to change. There's no way we can expect to win going into the fall election, where in September, people start voting in some states. By October, most states are voting. And we have to challenge the Democrats, not just with the Republican National Committee, but also with conservative nonprofits that tell people, if you're certain that you're going to vote for Donald Trump, why wait? Vote today. Whether it's early in person, whatever the state laws are, you know, abide by those laws. And if you can vote in person, vote in person. If you can vote by mail, vote by mail, but make, you know, do drop boxes. Georgia, for example, I worked with the late Speaker Ralston, who changed their election laws after they lost the presidential and the special election, and requires voter ID, not just for in-person voting, but also for mail-in absentees. And what was interesting about the comparison of the 2020 elections with 2022, in 2020, there was 1 million ballots cast by Dropbox or mail-in absentees. And the Secretary of State doesn't tell you what the difference is, where they would come from. I knew from post-election polls that we lost the mail-in vote, the absentees, 73, the Dropbox vote, 73 to 27 to Biden. With the voter ID law in Georgia that Biden was complaining about, calling it racist, et cetera, you didn't have a drop-off of vote, but you had a drop off of the mail-in drop boxes absentees from 1 million to 250,000 roughly in 2022. And that's because you couldn't cheat. You can't have somebody ballot harvest and collect votes for people that don't exist or aren't really there and drop them off 30, 40, 50, or 100 at a time. It's one person, one vote. Respect the honesty of the other person's vote. And so we're more optimistic about Georgia, but we've got to fight the efforts to repeal voter ID in other states, because what are the Democrats telling us when they're letting in millions, over 10 million illegal immigrants.
They don't care who votes as long as they get the vote. That's what they're saying.
Right. And they're saying we don't want to have voter ID. Well, if you don't have voter ID and you have tens of millions of illegal immigrants in the country, what do you think is going to happen? So other countries are appalled that this would even happen. So,
yeah, no, I think that's it is remarkable. Other countries looking, say, what happened to the greatest constitutional republic and voting democracy in history? They're wondering, why is America going in the other direction? One quick question. You look at the strength of President Trump's victories during the primaries, and you see now the foundations for victory in the general election in a place like Nevada, in a place like Michigan, in a place like Georgia, where there were losses in 2020. You've done some really great data work here. What's going on in these battleground states that were a little short for Trump in 2020, but seem to be moving in his direction in 2024?
Trump's either a little ahead, and you're right, Nevada's in Trump's column. He's ahead right now. Or tied, whether it's Wisconsin or Pennsylvania, we're roughly tied. But we're ahead in the other states, and we might be able to put other states in play like Minnesota, Virginia, et cetera. But right now, when you look at everybody agrees there's seven battleground states. Trump's ahead in Georgia. He's ahead in North Carolina. And you can go to the Real Clear Politics average and see that. He's ahead in Nevada, ahead in Arizona. So it looks very good right now, but like I said, it's 195 days to election day. So, and Biden is spending tens of millions of dollars in ads right now in these states trying to bring them back. And, right now, Trump, he's got us pinned down in court. Our campaign, we can't go hold rallies in these states because he's got to be in court. And Biden knows exactly what he's doing. So we're going to do the best we can to get our president out there when they give him a day off from court, and when they let us get out there so we can campaign, because we know we can win these states, whether it's Michigan. By the way, Michigan, that's another one where Biden's trying to end the auto industry, and Michigan voters want to vote to stop that. So the battleground states are looking very good. No, they're looking very good right now, but we really have they're called battleground states for a reason. And when you look at each of those states, it's not just battleground states, it's battleground counties. You can get into those counties with workers, and you can get into those counties with the candidates. And whether it's Maricopa in Arizona, or whether it's Clark County in Nevada, or whether it's Milwaukee County in Wisconsin, or Pennsylvania, you got the western part of the state. He's trying to put the oil and gas workers out. And Philadelphia, they're surrounded by crime. And, it's just crime and drugs. So we can get into a handful of counties and really, solidify those leads in those battleground states with the battleground counties.
Old-fashioned retail politics sealing the deal. And people are voting for their livelihood. They're voting for their safety. They're voting for the future of their children and their right to raise the children the way they want. Those are all winning issues for Trump and Republicans. Last question for you. The Democrats enter the general election pretty divided. There could be four Democrats on the ballot challenging or dividing up Joe Biden's traditional Democratic vote. You got RFK, you've got Jill Stein, you've got the Harvard Law professor and others. The fact that the Democrats have more options and they can protest and vote against Joe Biden with someone else that's aligned with him, even if they don't win, that's going to make things a little more difficult. How do you rate these other candidates and their potential to take votes away from Joe Biden's coalition?
I think the Democrats have a serious problem that Jill Stein will get a couple points on the Green Party line and pull Biden left. Same with Cornel West. But I think RFK Jr., because I know him from New York, I don't know him personally, but I know of him. I mean, he's got a long career as a left winger, and the RFK Fund Foundation, whatever they have, his wife's still on the board. Biden's an advisor, Obama's an advisor. They've got all these left wing positions, and they're trying to portray him as this maverick who's right of center. He's a Trojan horse. He's a Trojan horse, and now they're trying to say he's taking for Trump. He's not. The guy would ban all sorts of fossil fuels. He's got a long record against the death penalty for cop killers, et cetera. I mean, this guy, so that's the one to watch, because he really is a left winger. But for some reason, the Biden people see that threat and they want to try to portray him as being like Trump somehow, and he's not. So but in the meantime, Trump's ahead right now. We need to keep delivering our message in spite of the political persecutions. And we've got a long way to go between now and November 5th. So, in a historic election. So we just got to keep fighting every day. And Donald Trump is amazing the way he fights every day. I mean, no one in history has ever changed American politics like this, won in historic victories, and is capable of winning again in spite of the antagonism and the opposition of the entire system and a sitting incumbent president who's, in my view, is extremely corrupt, probably the most corrupt president in the history of America.
It's pretty remarkable. I think most people would say if 4 years ago or 3.5 years ago, if Donald Trump was in this position in 2024, it would be improbable, impossible. And now it is reality. And I think that that is one of the most amazing things. We forget where the mainstream media was 3 years ago. They had written his political obit, only now to see him in the lead in these polls. It's a pretty remarkable political story. There's no doubt about it. John, always a great honor to have you on. We always get great data, great insights. I'm going to need you all the way through the election. We'll be sure to get you back on real soon.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, my friend. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after these messages.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. If you were reading just the news late last week, you probably saw the news story that the Biden administration finally released its long-delayed Title IX regulation. This is a major change. It's going to have a devastating blow against women's rights in college, against women's athletics in the NCAA and elsewhere, basically because it gave such a broad interpretation of the term sex. It's going to completely upend the educational protections that women have really enjoyed for the last half century. All of the parity that's been gained through Title IX now put in extraordinary jeopardy by the Biden administration's new regulation. We have a great guest to walk us through what the law has done in the past, why it's being changed, why it's so dangerous the way it's being changed. She's the former senior counsel at the U.S. Department of Education and currently one of the Heritage Foundation's senior legal fellows. She's our good friend, Sarah Parshall Perry, and she joins us right now. Sarah, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
Title IX is, up until the last few days, one of the great success stories in America. It really gave women parity in college and college athletics. Tell us a little bit about its import and impact over the last half century.
Yeah, so it was passed in 1972, but after 6 to 7 months of real serious deliberation between House and Senate chambers, 250 versions of the bill leading up to Title IX actually passed between committees because there was such a great debate about the necessity. It was largely continued sort of as the sort of crowning achievement of the women's liberation movement and the feminist movement. They got equality in employment under Title VII, were not successful with the Equal Rights Amendment, but were successful in Title IX. And it is the only federal anti-discrimination law that only contains one category, and that's sex, not race or ethnicity or national origin or religion, as we often see with non-discrimination provisions. Simply, that is prohibited sex discrimination in any federally funded education program. And it has given women an opportunity to achieve both career success, both scholastic success, both athletic success. In fact, 94% of American female executives played scholastic sports in high school
or
college. Yeah, it's tremendous. So you see that the import over the years has really been exceptional. I have benefited. I went to law school as a function of the benefits secured to me by Title IX, as did my mother. My daughter is now getting ready to enter college on a college scholarship at D2 school because of her volleyball acumen. So it's impacted my life personally, but really generations of women as well.
So this has been working. It had sort of a, not improbable, actually very predictable, good outcome. Why would the Biden administration want to tinker with something that was working so well?
Well, therein, John, is a $64,000 question. We are tracing this back to his first official action as president. That was an executive order on January 21st. When he was being signed in, and that was a direction to all federal agencies, every one of his cabinet agencies, to take their federal laws and regulations prohibiting sex discrimination and expanding them to include gender identity discrimination. Now, you can realize exactly how catastrophic a change like that is. If you expand sex to include gender identity, you are opening up housing under the Department of Housing and Urban Development. You are opening up healthcare under the Department of HHS. And in education, we opened up now equality in education to anyone who identifies as a woman, regardless of underlying biology. And because we see women needing equality of opportunity and also spaces guaranteeing privacy and safety, right? Biology of men and women is different. It provides for things like women's restrooms, women's locker rooms, women's dorms, women's scholarship opportunities. It's really taking this particular rule, which goes into effect August 1st, it's taking that entire foundation of 52 years of equality for women in education and turning it literally on its head.
Yeah. Now, there are a lot of other Christmas tree items in this bill, too, including things that erode due process protections for students who are accused of sexual misconduct. There are some free speech protections that are eroded. This is sort of like a liberal censorship bill in addition to canceling women and kind of now creating a gender identity women in the law. Tell us about some of the other things that this bill does. It's sort of the liberal wish list.
Yeah, it really is. That's a great way to describe it. Well, one of the most, I think, noxious provisions is the fact that sexual harassment now can be satisfied by a showing of misgendering. So the failure to use someone's preferred pronouns in an educational format can support a Title IX sex discrimination claim. And let's just talk about the applicability here. So everyone sort of immediately thinks that Title IX is just athletics and it's just collegiate athletics. Well, it is every educational program starting in preschool and Head Start programs all the way through K-12, graduate school, college, trade school, vocational school, even after school programs. So the applicability of this is exceptionally wider, I think, than the average American voter understands. If, for example, your child goes to a charter school or a private school, those children will still be subject to this Title IX expansion, but the misgendering part of it, the unconstitutional de facto speech code, is incredibly pernicious within this rule. We have also, as you mentioned, seen a diminution of due process rights on college campuses. Now, colleges and universities have Title IX administrators who are tasked with essentially acting as investigators, judge, jury, and executioner to determine the future of an individual's educational career and to determine whether or not an accuser is telling the truth. There are no more live tribunals of impartial three or four administrators. This is down to what we like to call the single investigator model. That puts a lot of power in an unelected college bureaucrat. And in addition to that, the individuals who are accused do not have the right to examine the evidence against them and do not have, unless they can afford it, an automatic right to be represented by counsel. It also shifts the burden of proof. Under the previous administration, when we were working on securing protections for individuals who were both making accusations and were accused, we used a clear and convincing evidence standard. We wanted to make sure that these individuals had as much proof as possible. But now the Department of Education has regressed to what we call the preponderance of the evidence standard, and that's 51%, not really that high a bar. So we're worried about the future of our young people on college campuses not having an opportunity to really make sure that their interests and due process are protected.
It's pretty remarkable. The presumption of innocence continues to get eroded in so many different venues, including now this Title IX change. I want to make sure I understand, when you talk about misgendering, this potential change in the Title IX regulations would theoretically allow a student to be punished if they chose not to use the preferred pronoun of a teacher or a student. Is that as far as this may go?
That is exactly it. If that individual can demonstrate more than what's called de minimis harm, and that's essentially, John, 1%. If you can demonstrate any impact whatsoever, your feelings are hurt, or you felt as if you weren't part of the group with which you identify, that's sufficient to mount a Title IX complaint. Now, I'll tell you something about Title IX that many people don't realize. It's not just a federal law that is enforced by the Federal Department of Education. So you start that process by filing a complaint, and then the Department of Education has to investigate it. It also has what's called a private right of action, meaning that you can also go into private court and bring your own lawsuit against an individual that you believe has sexually harassed you. So it is protective. It has been protective for many years. It has been turned around now into essentially a weapon of war for a very hard left progressive ideology.
Unreal. These are really substantive and substantial and consequential changes. I don't think a lot of Americans know just how far reaching these changes are. There's another thing that I think a lot of people, particularly in the parents' rights movement, seem to be very concerned about. It does seem to weaken parents' protections and as it relates to notification of if their child is going through some form of social or other gender transition. Are there some erosions of parents' rights in that venue as right now?
Oh, absolutely, without question. And in fact, my most recent legal memo, which we're hoping to have out in the next few weeks, discusses how these school gender support policies that contain that confidentiality element are patently unconstitutional. But what this administration has done is, in reinforcing a child's, quote, right to privacy and preventing gender identity discrimination, you've put the pieces in place to not only facilitate these gender support plans and confidentiality plans, but to guarantee that parents across the country who are deemed to be unsupportive of their child's social transition, something, by the way, John, that the data indicates automatically, in many cases, leads to medical transition, you are going to invariably cut these parents out of one of the most, if not the most, impactful choices that these young people will ever make, how they at bottom identify themselves. And that is a particularly noxious portion of this rule as well.
Yeah, no, it's really remarkable. So now the question is, what are the options? Obviously, this is the Biden administration is going to plow ahead. They're going to implement this and force this into the regulatory fiat on August 1st. What are some of the options that Congress, the courts, and others can do to intervene, to put a stop to this, to slow this down, to try to bring some common sense back to the debate?
So two parallel paths have already begun sort of moving forward. The first is congressional opportunity to vote a rule that comes out of any executive agency down. And this actually happened during the Trump administration as well. They weren't often discussed, you know, they're not real high profile challenges. They have a tendency to be a little wonky and boring. But under what's called a Congressional Review Act challenge, either chamber, the Senate or the House, can vote down a rule by a 2/3 majority. They will send down that resolution to the president's office. The president, of course, gets an ultimate right of veto. But there are 60 legislative days in which to enact a CRA challenge. It's important because it tolls the clock on the applicability of this rule. And so we need good men and women in both chambers to stand up and say it's patently illegal. It turns equality on its head. And our nation's children and young people are at risk under this rule. Simultaneously to that, we know that there is already percolating federal litigation on quite a number of angles. We've talked about a bunch of them today, John. It's not just a violation of civil rights law. It's not a violation only of constitutional law and the First Amendment, but it's also a violation of something called administrative law. In following or sort of being tasked with following a law called the Administrative Procedure Act, every executive agency has to prove that their rules are not only legally supported, but they are financially sound and responsible. In other words, they cannot be rules that are, quote, arbitrary and capricious. Well, why the ink was still wet on the 2020 rule that we finalized under the Trump administration before that was rescinded immediately, the Department of Education could not prove that individuals who were LGBTQIA were not being protected in school, or that due process concerns had elevated under the rule. In fact, our rule was designed to secure those protections. So it's very likely that we're going to see challenges under the Administrative Procedure Act and under something called the Major Questions Doctrine. Well, that indicates that every federal agency cannot pluck a new version of law out of thin air. Federal agencies can make interpretations of standing federal law. They can make applications or clarifications of standing federal law. They cannot make new federal law. And because Title IX has never been amended to include gender identity or sexual orientation, that may be, particularly because of the hostility of this Supreme Court to sort of runaway federal agencies, that I think is going to be possibly the most successful challenge we're likely to see.
Yeah, such remarkable stuff. The times we're living in, the gains that women made in college and education in the last 50 years, all put at jeopardy at the altar of this new sort of liberal orthodoxy, which so many Americans reject. I mean, you look at the polling, nobody thinks it's the right thing to do, and yet this administration keeps plowing ahead. Sarah, for all the great work you do such amazing work on so many different fronts. What's the best way to stay in touch with your work at Heritage and on social media?
So you can find my work at heritage.org. Just search for my name, and you can follow me on Twitter, where I'm very active and very outspoken.
Oh, yes, you are.
At Sarah P. Perry.
Yeah, that's great. I want to make sure people have that. One last question, because obviously you played such an important role in the education department. I'd like to get your top line, what you're seeing on these college campuses right now, where the next generation of Americans will be our next CEOs, will be our next media personalities, will be our next judges and prosecutors and litigators. They all there are embracing in large numbers Hamas terrorists, suggesting that they are somehow worthy of praise and emulation and further acts of hostility. How did we get this crazy on our college campuses?
That's such a great question, John. I think we have failed to enforce the law as written and to enforce the law as it offers protection for every individual of every race, national origin, and ethnicity. And American Jewish students are protected by the Equal Protection Clause and Title VI of the Civil Rights Act that guarantees their freedom from race discrimination. It's just not being enforced. And I think we've got feckless, weak-kneed college administrators who are unable or unwilling to stand up and say, this has to be a learning environment that everyone can equally access And when you are putting Jewish students in fear for their lives because of the comments that you're making, because of the acts that you are taking, we need to step in and do something very serious. My hope is that now we've seen a proliferation of lawsuits. I think the first chief among them is a suit against Berkeley University brought by the Brandeis Center because of their pervasive environment of anti-Semitism. I think we're going to need to pin the ears back of these college administrators who refuse to stand up to this woke nonsense.
Yeah, that's it. It's time for action. Silence or inaction is complicity right now. And this is the moment where Americans are going to be called upon to take control of the country, restore common sense. That's all people want, just common sense. Sarah, it's always an honor to have you on. Great work. I love all the work you're doing at Heritage right now. Thanks for helping us make sense of this very important change that the Biden administration is imposing on America. Great to have you on today.
Thanks for having me, John.
Yeah, great honor. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back with more in just a few seconds.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's hard to believe, but that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. I'm really grateful that each of you could join today. Now, one reminder, a lot of people say, hey, John, do you have an app at the Just the News? And the answer is we sure do. And not only do we have an app, it's in the Apple Store. It's also in the Android Store. It allows you to take the Just the News experience and go in three different ways. You can watch our videos and television shows. You can listen to this podcast and many others like it, like Victor Davis Hanson, or you can read the stories that we do a day, 50, 60, 70 stories a day of the breaking news, investigative reporting, accountability reporting. Go to the iOS App Store or the Android Store today. Download the Just the News app. Read, watch, listen. Three great ways to experience the Just the News content and to join the Just the News family. And if you really want to get involved with the family and say, hey, I want to support your investigative reporting, John Solomon. I want to support the great reporters and the producers and the bookers and everybody that works to make the Just the News experience possible. You can do something really inexpensive that makes a big difference. All you got to do is join the Just the News VIP club. That's right. What do you get for the VIP club? First off, ad-free experience on the website and on your newsletters. No ads, no dancing videos, no autoplay videos. An ad-free experience on Just the News 24/7. Plus, once a month, you get to hang out with me at justthenews.com. We have a town hall. I sit and answer your questions for an hour. We talk about issues you care about. We cover topics that the other media aren't covering. It's an incredible experience to join the family, the immediate family of the Just the News team. Great opportunity. Sometimes we bring in our reporters. It's always a delightful time. If you want to get involved in that, go to justthenews.com/subscribe. justthenews.com/subscribe. Quick way to get into the club. It's $4.99 a month, $44.99 a year. Great way to support our journalism, make a difference, and get an enormous benefit yourself. So go check it out today. All right, folks, that wraps up John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. God bless you. God bless you. Have a great night. God bless this great country of the United States. Be sure to go to justthenews.com if you need that news fix. We got you covered 24/7.